Hello, West Liberty. This is Alex. You are listening to WGLZ. We are college radio and we are passionately vocal. Welcome to Distinctive Discussion, the final part of the four-part series titled Passionately Vocal. Today, I have Ben Stark on the phone with me. Ben is the owner of the Star Company and has been since 2006. He's previously been a cable television supervisor for the Lansing School District, a production supervisor at Media One Cable Television, and a cable television coordinator at Meriden Charter Township. Ben has also been called upon to do commentary for Michigan State and has called volleyball, women's basketball, gymnastics, and softball for the Spartans. He has also called semi-professional football for the Lansing Crusaders. To get the ball rolling, Ben, why did you pursue roles in cable television supervision and coordination early in your career?
Good afternoon, West Liberty. Season's greetings to everybody in West Virginia here in mid-Michigan. So we are up here in Lansing area of Michigan, and the question having to do with how I got into cable television. And so it all began with an internship, Alex. I recommend all college students who are pursuing a career in any field get at least one good internship. And I got one in my final year at Michigan State University, which was at a place called Meridian Township, which is just adjacent to East Lansing in the Lansing area. And so I worked that internship for my senior year and wound up getting a call from one of the top managers there at the township a couple years later saying they wanted me to apply for a full-time job. So I did, and I got it. And that's how I got into cable TV. It was a government access station. So this is in the realm of what's called cable access, but it's a form of public access, but it's government access, where the government gets a cable channel, and they can put whatever resources they want into it. And there weren't many resources going into it when I got there, but we got a lot done in 13 years. And when I started there, we had a 150-square-foot room with a bunch of old consumer-grade equipment. And 13 years later, I left them with over 1,000-square-feet facility with a 800-square-foot studio, 93 programming awards at the state, regional, and national level, and an 8-year streak of at least one national first place award during that time.
Wow, that's really impressive, actually. And to go back to what you were saying with internships, I'm a junior here at West Liberty, so this summer I'll be looking around to see what I can kind of get into. So how did your time as a cable television coordinator at Meriden Charter Township prepare you for the responsibilities you'd face later in your career?
Well, I'd almost turn it around because I had worked at the university radio station at Michigan State. So that's different than the student radio station. This was a National Public Radio affiliate. And so it was a really high-quality organization. I was one of a few students who actually were paid to work there. And so I learned a lot about newsroom and news reporting. I was a reporter and then a news anchor. And I had about 2 years at a news radio station right after graduation. So when I came back to Meridian Township, I simply tried to apply the lessons I had learned in my previous jobs. It was primarily sort of a news and information channel, which is consistent with my background. I guess we could have maybe gone into entertainment, but that's a little unusual for a government operation to be producing entertainment shows. But anyway, all the lessons you learned from being an anchor and being a reporter and then to try and teach the young people who came through under me, because what I did was created an internship program at Meridian Township, and I formed the station or created the cable station called Home TV, and that's HOM-TV. That stood for the two municipalities within Meridian Township, which were Hazlet and Okemos. That's the H and the O, and then the M is Meridian. And the idea is Home TV, meaning we're going to talk about where you live. This is not a station in New York or L.A. or Chicago. We're going to be talking about your community. And basically brought in students to work as intern reporters and intern what we called production types, and put together a station. So I guess, the lessons from Home TV or Meridian Township were carried forward from there, but I really took lessons from WKAR and then the news radio station that I worked at and eventually wound up running for 2 years before getting to Meridian Township.
So as a production supervisor at Media One Cable Television, what were some of the most memorable projects or challenges you encountered?
You know, there are always challenges. I just don't know any job that doesn't have challenges. So you're right, there were a lot. What I did was kind of scale up the entire operation. I was trying to basically take what I created on the east side of the area in the small Meridian Township to the large Lansing Cable Company that I was hired at. And we did pretty good in a lot of ways for about 3 years. You have to kind of play with the cards you're dealt. And what I happened to walk into at that job was maybe a mediocre employee situation, which is a little different than I was used to at home TV because I was bringing in top-notch people. But they had a production truck. They had more than one, really, but we had production trucks so that we could take these trucks out and cover community events. Now, mostly what they had been doing before I got there was the occasional parade and then also some high school football. So I certainly kept those things going. But I was able to sign a contract with Michigan State University to provide coverage of what they called their women's Olympic sports. Now, this goes back more than 20 years ago, and it's before the creation of the Big Ten Network. All right, so you know that all the college conferences now, or at least the biggest ones, have their own network. The Big Ten Network probably started around 20 years ago. But in the few years right before it, there was a great demand for coverage of their sporting events, and we were able to fill that gap to a good degree, covering women's basketball, women's volleyball, women's fast pitch softball, gymnastics. So we also did some youth gymnastics. But as far as the MSU sport, this was a big challenge to really get people to work harder than they were used to. Yeah. Everybody got paid. There's no problem there. Overtime occurred and all that. But we rolled that truck about 150 times in 3 years, and somewhere around 100-plus were sport. And you get kind of a down period in the summer. So the main part of the year is pretty hectic. You could have more than one remote per week. We had a lot of Thursday, Sunday for women's basketball. The challenge there, Alex, is just to get the job done and to get it done better than it was the day before. And that's really a constant, rolling, ongoing challenge.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. I see that even with games I'm doing, looking to see how I can improve from one game to the next and always trying to get a step better each time I go on air. So when you were working at the Lansing School District as a cable television supervisor, that must have been a pretty unique experience as well. How did that kind of shape your approach to media and storytelling?
So it's interesting. I did go from the cable company to the school district. Now, that would be for what's called their educational access channel. So Meridian Township was government access. The cable company was both public access and what's called local origination, which means by the cable company. And then at the Lansing School District, that's called educational access, school access. So what I was trying to do there was kind of continue the whole project in a different venue. And it was a new job at the Lansing School District. It was a challenging job because the Lansing School District is the urban school district in the mid-Michigan area and consequently constantly suffering from declining enrollment. So that Lansing School District, when I was in school in this area, had about 30,000 total students. But when I started that job, it was more like 14,000. And then it's currently under 10,000. So that was different than at Meridian Township because it was essentially declining. But we did a lot. So we got classes established in the high schools for TV production, video production. We got them equipment to use to do multi-camera remote productions. And then I took a supervisory role or quasi-supervisory over the teachers. They didn't literally work for me, so I couldn't actually give them orders or instructions, but they were expected to sort of work with me on a professional basis. And I don't have quick numbers on how many times we used those things, but, man, we got a lot of concerts out. We got some high school basketball. We did not get high school football because these remote production units really – I mean, we could have taken them outside, but you'd be – kind of running them down a little bit and risking it. The other thing then as far as staffing, because I was a new full-time position there at the school district, and I had a secretary and a part-timer. But that wasn't going to, you know, do it. So we had to find kids through these programs at the high schools to move into the production positions. So I kind of mimicked what I did at Home TV in a sort of a long process of getting high school students who, by the way, ironically, one of the high school students that worked for me there has actually gone on to a career with the Big Ten Network. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It really comes down to working with young people, Alex. And I guess, you know, we can talk about that under leadership, but it certainly was an ongoing challenge at the school district. We were very successful and we had a lot of fun.
Okay, so you mentioned talking about leadership real quick before we start talking about your commentary days at Michigan State. What leadership strategies did you develop that you still use today working all these media and production roles?
So one thing I like about that question is that it acknowledges that there are different approaches you can use in terms of leadership. And I think that you have to be flexible and figure out what works in a given situation. Sometimes people come in and go, well, I'm this kind of leader or I'm that kind of leader. And then they try and fit their own style into the situation. And I think that's incorrect. I think the leader has to adapt to the situation. Otherwise, they're not much of a leader. So in my case, when I go into a situation where I have no full-time, we didn't talk about the news radio much. I had certainly full-time people there. That's a two-year thing. But when I got to Meridian Township, there were no employees. So I had to create my own. And the first ones of them were interns. So they're not getting paid. But you know, Alex, you can just think of your own position in your career right now. The young people really have a lot of motivation. And So the leadership strategy is to channel their motivation forward in the direction you want them to go. And which is, not as hard as it sounds because there's a lot of directions they want to go and they're willing to do it. And you take that strategy of what I would call an employee-centric leadership style. You have to consider the employee. You have to consider what they're trying to do, why they're trying to do it, and how they're going to be able to be successful, and then let them do it. Don't try and make them go at the speed of the whip that you're cracking. Make them go at the speed of their own heart that's beating forward in the direction they want to go.
For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to Distinctive Discussion, which is the final part of the four-part series titled Passionately Vocal. I'm your host, Alex, and I've got Ben Stark on the phone. So far, we've talked about some of the media and production occupations he has held in the past, and now we're going to go ahead and shift gears a little bit into his commentary days. Just as a refresher, Ben called volleyball, women's basketball, gymnastics, and softball for the Michigan State Spartans, and he also called semi-professional football for the Lansing Crusaders. So, Ben, can you talk about how you got started doing sports commentating?
Yep, and it's kind of interesting because I had a job as a student at MSU for the radio station, and that started working for what's called the sub-channel. And I don't know if you've covered this in your classes yet, and I'm not sure the station you're at right now, if they have one, but many radio stations, many FM AM radio stations have a sub-channel that they can broadcast on. You need a special receiver to receive it. So this is used in public safety or in the military a lot. But it was used by WKAR to provide print information for the print handicapped. So in other words, people would come in and read newspapers and magazines, and then the subscribers really for free could get one of these receivers. So he's basically talking about people who can't see being able to hear people read books. Well, anyway, I came up with this idea. Hey, how about we take a tape recorder into Spartan Stadium for a football game one day? Because a lot of the radio production emphasis was on sound, which I think you know. And if you take a microphone onto the playing field of a college football game, you get a lot of sound.
Right.
So I actually went in there one day, and there was no particular assignment, just stand on the sideline and see what you can come up with. So I just kind of made up some play calls and recorded things. And, you know, I kind of liked it. And I got a call later from when I was working at the news radio station, a colleague of mine was doing play-by-play for a semi-pro football team. And he said, would you like to come out and try being a color commentator? So I said, yeah, sure. And we did one game. And at the end of the game, he goes, hey, would you please come back every time? So I did that for a couple years. And the bottom line, though, is, Alex, and I can tell you a few other examples, but at every stop along the way, I kind of found a way to do some sports, and it just culminated in quite a bit of it there with the Michigan State contract right around the turn of the century.
I gotcha. So can you give us some details about all the sports you've done in your commentating days?
Yeah, if you want to count that one day in Spartan Stadium with the microphone, but then the Crusaders, which is a semi-pro football team, did a couple of years there as color commentator. Then when I went to Meridian Township at the cable job, we were able to get the production truck from the cable company to cover a handful of high school sporting events, high school football and boys basketball. And so I did that for 3 years, and then I was contacted later by the cable company through a former employee of mine who was working there. So she said, would you come out and help us, with this basketball? And then I wound up getting hired there is when I went to the cable company. And so I did all those games, probably 75 to 100 games in that 3 year period. And at the Lansing School District, that we did use those portable production, mini studios in the gymnasiums for some boys basketball as well.
Okay, all that seems pretty cool to me. So when did you get your first job in radio?
So my first job in radio was as a result of that radio talking book subchannel operation, which had volunteers, and my mom was a volunteer. So she heard that there was a job for, and a job opening for a radio person part-time, and she told me, and then I got hired there. But the funny thing is, if you go back, I was at our high school radio station. So that's where my mom picked up that I might be interested. So that is a good inside connection.
Oh, okay.
But I definitely deserved to be hired, so it wasn't like a favor or something.
Yeah,
but,
I get you.
So I worked there at WKAR on the MSU campus. And then after that, worked news radio and for a couple of years. And I really am a radio guy, even when I'm doing TV.
I gotcha. So you told me off air that you got to meet Magic Johnson. How did that happen?
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because I'm the same grade as Irvin Magic Johnson, who went to Lansing Everett when I went to East Lansing. So they're two different high schools. And so he was the big star, my same grade. And it was kind of funny because our senior year in high school, we had a very poor basketball team. And I'll just say we had a great football team. But in high school, we had a very poor basketball team. So when Irvin came over to play, we kind of rooted for him. And it was kind of funny because he scored 50 points in that game. But I didn't meet him there. I saw him at MSU registration because, again, he went over to be a student just like I did. And so I saw him one day in the big room because he kind of stands out, being 6'8 or 6'9.
Right.
But what happened was, working at the university radio station, a guy there who knew Irvin came out. He played softball with me on the IM team, intramural. And so, anyway, he showed up one day for a game and said, hey, Irvin's here and he'd like to play. And this was 3 weeks after the Los Angeles Lakers beat the Philadelphia 76ers in six games to win the NBA championship, with Irvin playing a center in place of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So that was 3 weeks after that happened. We're on the IM softball field, and here comes Irvin to play on my team. And my instructions were he played third and batted third, so that's what I did. On that team, I played shortstop. So in that game, I played right next to Irvin, which was pretty cool. My one quick story to tell you about him, though. His first two times up, he hit stand-up doubles. That's on these IM fields, there's no fence. So if a guy can hit it pretty well, there's a good chance you get on. He had those two stand-up doubles. We were 3-0 going into that game, so we thought we were pretty good, but we really weren't any good. And so this team that we were playing was beating us up pretty well, even though Irvin had the two doubles. So it got down towards the end of the game, and Irvin had his third at bat coming up, and we're not going to win the game. We knew that. But he probably tried to win the game with one swing, and he wound up hitting a one-hopper to the pitcher. So there's a moment frozen in time where Irvin Magic is in his backswing of, he hasn't even completed his swing, and the pitcher's got the ball in his hand. And this is a guy that was MVP of the NBA Finals just 3 weeks earlier. So this kid at the pitcher thought he's going to really milk it. He literally held the ball out and showed it to Irvin, like, I'm going to throw you out now. This was something. I was coaching third at the time. I looked at Irvin, and there was such a flurry of action and motion in his body. He just turned on the jets and headed to first because he's not going to stand there and get thrown out. He just busted it down to the first, on the first baseline. And this guy with the ball, a pitcher, freaked out and threw the ball over the first baseman's head. And that is what I call magic. The dude got a base hit on a one-hopper back to the pitcher. That's the kind of winner he is.
That's crazy, honestly. So have you met any other famous people while working in sports?
Well, you do tend to meet them. I met Ernie Harwell, who may or may not sound familiar to you, but he was the voice of the Detroit Tigers for 30-plus years. Maybe it's 40. He's very well-known around here. And then some other Detroit Tigers that day that I went to Tiger Stadium. You know, I've met football coaches as well, and certainly Tom Izzo, the head coach here, basketball head coach at Michigan State.
That's pretty cool, actually. So we're getting ready to wrap this up. What advice would you give to young people just getting started on sports commentating?
So my advice is to get as much experience as possible. So I said to get an internship. I think in terms of, I'll give you one concrete suggestion. When you're commentating, when you're the play-by-play guy for a sporting event, you have certain frames for each segment. You have your ins and your outs, and you have all your different tosses. If you can get those transitions as memorized as possible or have them scripted right in front of you and just do it, just read it out, your tosses in and your tosses out. So welcome back or good afternoon, here we are. They get all that stuff down so you can do that without thinking. Then the internal section, the content of the game, is where you get to then ad lib and make things colorful.
Okay. As a guy who calls for Wheeling University, six different sports, I'll keep that in mind going forward because, honestly, I didn't even think of that. And with that, we've reached the end of this distinctive discussion. This was the final part of the four-part series titled Passionately Vocal. I want to thank Ben Stark for calling into the station today to talk about his previous media and production roles and his time spent as a commentator for the Michigan State Spartans and Lansing Crusaders. But now it's time to get back to the music. My name's Alex, and you are listening to WGLZ. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal.